As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Good morning and welcome to the NBA Daily Ding here on the Athletic Podcast Network. My name is Jared Weiss. I got a special guest for today's show, Law Murray, our Clippers writer here at the Athletic. Law, what is good, man?
Jared, just want to thank you for having me on. I know it's difficult circumstances, but I'm really glad to be able to speak with you here.
Oh, Law, you don't want to thank me yet. I'm about to put you through hell here on the Daily Ding. So we're about to give you 15 minutes of fun from the NBA on Thursday night. We have to start with the big news, which is Anthony Davis finally made his return for the Los Angeles Lakers, but they lost to the Dallas Mavs 115-110. Law, how did AD look in his first game back?
Offensively, AD, what we didn't see him do is we didn't see him putting the ball on the floor too much. You know, he started 0-for-5. A lot of his offense came on jump shots. He only made one of those jump shots. Even in the paint, overall, you know, you can see the rust there as far as his termination of plays. The Mavericks double teamed him once early in the second quarter. He did a good job finding Ben McLemore for a three. Mavs went right back to a similar double. This time they left Talen Horton-Tucker open, and AD threw that thing out of bounds. So there was a lot there. He took a lot of shots in that time. He was very involved. You know, he looked like AD defensively at times. Had a nice little interception, blocked Porzingis jump shot, which is not easy to do. You know, that dude's 7'3". The advantage to KP playing on the perimeter so much is he can shoot over everybody. He couldn't shoot over AD. So there's flashes of a guy who you look at him and it's like, hey, he's still 6'10", 6'11", still a difference maker, still a usage hog in that way. But when a guy misses 2 months, these are the games where it's like you got to take some rust. Even though these games sort of matter to the Lakers, obviously, you want AD to knock this rust off on April 22nd, not May 22nd. So that's really the main takeaways from AD. Like, he looked like a guy who hadn't played in 2 months, but he also looked like Anthony Davis a lot for the most part.
I got to say, usage hog. I haven't heard that one before. I'm adding that to my vernacular. That is a great phrase. Forget about being a ball hog. You're a usage hog. I feel like that's even more than a ball hog, but he's Anthony Davis. You kind of want him to be that kind of guy. You mentioned Kristaps Porzingis in there. We saw him go down with what looked kind of like an ankle tweak. Are you concerned at all from what you saw?
I'd be concerned. First of all, that might not even be the worst thing that happened to him, because he definitely got Johnny Cage earlier in the third quarter. Shout out to the Mortal Kombat movie coming out Friday. You know, he got up from that, you know, again, due to 7'3". Every time he touches earth, like, you're going to be concerned because of the fact that in a vacuum, he's a big man. But he's a big man who has lost significant time in his young career due to lower leg injuries. And this is another one. You just got to be cautious. And these teams play Saturday. It's the last of these mini series that you get in this weird NBA season. And why would you throw them out there? It's just too much risk. And that's unfortunately the story of Dallas this season. So, yeah, I'd be concerned because you can't bring him back like a normal sized human being. He's 7'3 with a history. So you got to be more cautious with him than normal.
Too much risk, the Dallas Mavericks story. So they have a 2.5-game lead over the Mavs, the Lakers do, in the standings, if I have that right. And the Mavs are tied with the Blazers for the sixth seed. The Blazers have the tiebreak, so they're up at the six. Mavs are down in the play-in zone at the seven. If the Mavs beat the Lakers in that next game, that gets it down to only 1.5 games difference. There's like an outside chance here. The Lakers could end up falling into the play-in tournament. Do you think that's likely?
I don't think it's likely, just because, for one, the Blazers aren't playing well at all on their end. So I think that's going to be something to watch. The Lakers and Blazers have split their two games and they have one more to play. The Blazers need to figure it out real quick. The Blazers are probably in more danger of slipping than the Lakers are. The Lakers are getting healthier. The Blazers just, they don't look very good. Of course, Dallas, it's funny. Those dudes complained about the play-in tournament. You know, they might mess around, be thankful for the play-in tournament the way they've been playing. So Saturday's game, man, it's going to be really interesting. Again, we're talking about tiebreakers. That's a big advantage in this race here. The way things are right now, Lakers at 5, I think they're going to be, that's as low as they get, just because I don't trust Portland or Dallas to play well enough to pass them.
Let's move on to the Milwaukee Bucks beating the Sixers in our earlier TNT game, 124-117. I mean, this was a lot closer than a 7-point game. The Bucks were up by pretty much at least 15 points pretty much the entire time until the very end when Philly made their big comeback. But this was another pretty great game for Giannis Antetokounmpo. He had 27 points, 8 for 15 from the field, 10 for 18 from the line. I mean, you don't want to see somebody shooting 50% from the line, but still, getting there 18 times ain't bad. He had 16 boards.
This is as many times as Philly got there.
Oh, that's a good point. So, yeah, okay, so that was the big thing that I was seeing in this game, was Giannis attacking Joel Embiid off kind of the face-up from the high post on the left side and just getting by him pretty easily.
This was a logistical nightmare for the Sixers, man. I mean, for one, when you look at the schedule and you know what's coming up, the worst thing to do in the NBA in the regular season is to play extended minutes, tight minutes in a close game. So you're playing full effort until the end. And then the next damn game, you got to hop on a plane, change time zones, and play a team that's been chilling. The team that reasonably could have been watching you on TV, right, lose, and then you got to come to their town, to their time zone. So when the Bucks were up 33-13 in the first quarter, it was like, that's logistics right there. And that's before you get to Philly being shorthanded. Doc Rivers didn't want to put Joel on Giannis too much after halftime, because you mess around and that's the 2-3 matchup in the East. You might be having a whole playoff series with just those two going at each other. So, yeah, Giannis had a nice night. Joel, it's probably not going to be one of the parts of his MVP reel, if you want to call it that. But at the same time, this was one of those tricky games. Logistically, you're not going to see a duplicate performance probably if these teams were in a matchup in the playoffs.
Joel only played 26:50 in this game. Nobody on the Sixers played more than 30 minutes in this one. And of course, they were missing Ben Simmons. But I thought one of the most interesting things, I guess, just from a narrative perspective, was George Hill gets what I think was his first start with the Sixers, if I'm not mistaken, played 21 minutes. Shake Milton did not get the start in this one. He ended up having 20 points and 4 dimes, while Hill only had 6 points and 0 dimes. So, yeah, Shake's really staking his claim here. He's not letting George come in and take his minutes from him.
They needed to get Shake on track. Shake's been playing pretty poorly, which he's actually been an outlier for a Sixers bench that Doc loves to throw out all 5 bench guys at once. He used to do that with the Clippers a lot. And those bench guys can defend, but they really struggle to scratch. And it's compounded when Shake struggles. That's what they needed George Hill for in the first place. They traded for an injured guy because it was like, you know what you're getting, a known commodity. So I think tonight benefited both. You know, it's nice to see George Hill back healthy after he missed almost 3 months with thumb surgery. It's also nice to see Shake Milton get it together. And the Sixers, they have time to figure out how that dynamic's going to work going into the playoffs. Jared, I got to mention, the Sixers fell to 39-20. And I don't know if you heard of Phil Jackson's 40 wins before 20 losses notes, a legitimate Who? Contender. Phil Jackson.
Okay, I've heard of him. Okay.
Yeah, he had a theorem that if you're a legitimate contender, the benchmark he looks at in the regular season is get 40 wins before a team gets 20 losses. that all of his championship teams achieved that mark. I did a little research, put a little story out on The Athletic. Subscribe to The Athletic. And only three teams in the three-point era failed to reach that benchmark, Jared. And none of them since the 2006 Miami Heat. So there's a lot of different benchmarks out there. What's a contender? Well, who's a pretender? That kind of thing. But I thought that that was interesting. So the Sixers, they didn't get there. None of the East teams got there. The only teams that will get there, because every team in the league has 20 losses except for the Utah Jazz, the Phoenix Suns, and the team that I covered, the LA Clippers.
So that being said, in today's context, do you think that the Suns and the Clippers, and I guess the Jazz too, are legitimate contenders at a level that's different than like Philly and Brooklyn or Milwaukee?
I think Phil Jackson would say that. And I'm just backing, I'm just putting out, extrapolating Phil's long point. That is also the context to say you can set whatever baseline you want. It still has to come out in the end, right? So think of this as like a hypothesis. And I mean, you want experiments. This whole damn season is like an experiment, Jared. So like, we're going to see the great experiment of this 2021 postseason play out a certain type of way. And who knows, for the first time in 15 years, a team that doesn't reach that benchmark might mess around and win the championship. Last year, six teams won 40 games before they lost 20. One of those teams was the Lakers, but one of those teams was not the Miami Heat, who made it to the finals, getting through a couple teams that did win 40 before 20. So it'll be interesting to see how this holds up over the course of the next 2 months.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So the last thing to talk about from this night is that the Rockets and the Wolves were both eliminated from playoff contention. I know, Law, it is shocking news to find out that these teams are not going to make it to the playoffs. It's not going to happen this year. So, you know, when you get eliminated from the playoffs that early, when you're the two worst teams in the NBA, you're hoping you at least did something to build towards the future. Do you feel like those teams pulled that off this year?
You know what, man? It's crazy that as bad as those two teams were, they still made it within a month of the season ending before finally someone was eliminated. That's the consequence of the play-in tournament right there. But what's messed up is the Timberwolves and Rockets, first teams eliminated, and there's a chance that both of those teams lose their pick in this year's draft. So that would be incredibly unfortunate for both. I mean, you got the Rockets who flipped their whole damn organization. You know, you got the Timberwolves who had to replace their coach midseason with a coach who wasn't even in the organization. Cat, D'Lo, and Ant played 12 games this year. 12 going into Friday. That's a lack of progress, because you got guys who you're building your team around a number one pick franchise guy who you extended, a number two pick in from that same draft that cost you your previous number one pick, and the reason why you might lose this year's lottery pick, D'Angelo Russell, and then the number one pick that you just drafted in Anthony Edwards, who may or may not be the best rookie this year or going forward. Now, I think Ant's gotten better as this year's gone along. I think Cat has done a great job being the leader. D'Lo is going to be the wild card here, because I think he can be really good as a sixth man, which is where the new coach Finch has him right now, but he's not there to be a sixth man. He's got to fit, and that team bleeds so many points. Those three bleed points together, so they need to figure that part out. As for the Rockets, again, franchise player gone. Road Dog that they got last year that caused this swap in the first place with OKC gone. They lost 20 games in a row. Their damn coach is breaking down in the middle of the season. Like, this was a really bad season for them. You haven't seen the Rockets lose games, have a losing season in like 14 years. That's crazy. So I didn't like the progress that either one of these teams made, and you just hope that they get some luck this offseason.
Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Don't forget to subscribe at theathletic.com/ding. Law, thank you. You were terrific. We're going to definitely have you back on the show.
Thank you, Jared. Appreciate it.
Before we go, I have to talk about something that we all know about and is actually very personal for me, but former Kentucky Wildcat, future NBA player, was going to be Terrence Clark. He died in a car crash in Los Angeles on Thursday. I've known Terrence for a few years now, was actually spending the last couple of years building a feature on him that was going to run on The Athletic this year before the draft. And he's just one of the most wonderful people I've met. Was just so incredibly sweet, fun, happy, jovial, talented, like unbelievably talented. And it was so great being able to know him. And I've just been in a catatonic state this entire evening after I heard the news, and we're all worse for it because the NBA was going to be a fun place with him in it. And it was too bad because he had a rough year at Kentucky, but I've seen the guy play for years now. I know his mental makeup. I know who he is. I knew that he was going to be one of those guys that would fall a bit in the draft because college didn't go well for him. And then he was going to figure it out in the right environment, the NBA, and his unbelievable skill was going to take over. And it just sucks so much that we didn't get to see that. And it sucks so much for his wonderful mother and younger brother, much, much younger brother, really small, really adorable kid who has to grow up with an older brother. And it sucks. It's as simple as that. And so we hope that the Clark family can find some peace, some comfort in just knowing that everybody that knew Terrence loved him, like everybody. And everyone thought that he was the best, and they didn't even care that he was going to be a huge basketball star. They just loved being around him because he was just so much fun to be around.
There's a quote from the Boston Globe from a story that had talked about how Jaylen Brown was a mentor to Clark. And he said, when I was younger, I didn't have it somebody I could talk to and be there for everybody in the city. And that when I get to a high level, I want to be there for the other kids that are trying to be at the same level I'm going to be at. I want to be an advocate for the city and set an example for everybody else. A lot of times people don't have someone in their corner, so I want to be that guy for everyone in the city. That was from Terrence Clark. That was just over a year ago. I think that is an example of who he was and who he wanted to be, and that's what makes, I mean, this is a tragedy all the way around, but to have a light like that be turned out prematurely is absolutely heartbreaking. So I feel for you, and I feel for everybody who knew him and all those who didn't get to know him.
I wrote a story on last night after getting the call, and I hope it'll be running. We'll see. It was a very personal story, so we'll see. So hopefully it's out when you guys are listening to this, but I talked a lot in there about that and about how proud he was to represent the city of Boston, which is a city that is obviously synonymous with basketball, right? It's one of the big basketball powerhouses with the Celtics, yet hasn't had any players come out of here in a long time that really made it huge on the national stage. Nerlens Noel is doing well right now. There's a few other players, but Patrick Ewing is basically the last great player to come from Boston, and Terrence really was excited to take that mantle and try to be the next Patrick Ewing for the city. And I thought the thing that was so great was that when he announced that he was going to Kentucky, he did it at the community center that he always played at when he was a kid in inner city Boston. And he wanted to make sure that they were the ones getting the attention because they were the people that made him and it was his community. And so he did it there instead of doing it at his beautiful prep school that he was going to so we could play at high level competition up in New Hampshire. And so I thought that was really emblematic of who he was. And yeah, he was going to do great things for Boston and for the kids in Boston who need it, which, Boston's a very very stratified city, sadly, still. And so it really needed his help. And hopefully his memory will continue to do that and inspire. So we're going to say goodbye for now, but we send our love forever for Terrence.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.